Look at any steel bridge, right? And you are basically looking at an illusion.
Yeah, that is a great way to put it.
I mean, macroscopically, it seems like this single unbreakable solid. You drive your car over it, or, take an elevator to the top of a skyscraper, and you just assume the metal is intrinsically uniformly strong.
We all do. We trust it completely.
Right. But microscopically, it is a frozen battleground of chaotic atoms.
It really is. It's an incredible paradox to explore, honestly. Because that structural integrity we rely on, it depends entirely on this microscopic atomic choreography happening at scales we can barely even comprehend.
Let alone see with the naked eye.
Exactly.
So today on our deep dive, we are taking our stack of sources and zooming in on that choreography way, way in. We're going to extract a very specific nugget of insight about that battleground.
A very fascinating one, I might add.
Oh, absolutely. Our mission for this deep dive is to unpack a legendary 1989 scientific paper from the journal Materials Science and Technology.
Right, written by researchers J.R. Yang and H.K.D.H. Padatia.
Yes, those two. And they basically set out to decode the hidden microscopic rules that make high-strength steel welds tough and reliable.
Which is incredibly important for, well, basically modern infrastructure.
Totally. So we are going to explore a specific structural component inside the steel called acicular ferrite.
Vesicular ferrite.
And more importantly, we're going to unravel the physical mystery of why the microscopic plates of this material align themselves in this highly coordinated fashion. Because, every single law of physics and the chaotic environment they grow in dictates that they should be completely and utterly random.
Right. To understand the sheer improbability of how these microscopic plates align, we first need to establish what this material actually
The
is.
volatile environment where it forms, right?
Exactly. When a welder joins two pieces of steel, they are creating a localized pool of liquid metal.
Just a boiling puddle.
Yeah, it is incredibly hot, chaotic fluid. But as that weld travels along the joint, the liquid pool rapidly cools and solidifies right behind it.
Just instantly freezing.
Yeah, pretty much. And during that rapid drop in temperature, the internal structure of the steel goes through a profound transformation.
Because it is not just turning from liquid to solid. I mean, even after it is solid, the atoms inside are still rearranging themselves as the heat bleeds away.
That's right. The parent structure of the hot solid steel is a phase called austenite.
Okay, austenite.
But as the temperature plunges, that austenite wants to transform into a different phase called ferrite.
And we want a specific type of ferrite, right?
Yes. In high-strength weld deposits, the most desirable type that can develop is this acicular ferrite.
Now, I always think of the word acicular as meaning needle-like. So we are talking about these tiny, sharp little structures forming inside the cooling metal.
Well, in a two-dimensional slice, under a microscope, they certainly look like needles.
Oh, but they aren't?
Not exactly. If you visualize them in three dimensions, they're more like flattened lenses
Okay.
or incredibly thin plates.
Got it. Thin plates.
And their presence is highly sought after by metallurgists because they specifically improve the toughness of the weld deposit.
How so?
They act as these microscopic interlocking shields. They basically make the metal highly resistant to cracking.
Okay, interlocking shields. I like that visual.
But the way those plates actually form is where the conventional physics starts to break down a bit.
This is the mystery part.
Right. Normally, when metal changes its internal structure, the atoms arrange themselves through a process called reconstructive diffusion.
Okay, let's unpack this. We need to visualize that diffusion for the listener.
Sure.
Imagine reconstructive diffusion like a bunch of people aimlessly wandering around a crowded party.
A party. Okay.
Yeah. The music is playing, the energy is high, and over a long period of time, people with similar interests might slowly migrate across the room, bump into each other and form a little group.
That's a great analogy. It is a slow, random process.
Right. And it requires a lot of thermal energy, the party music, to keep everyone moving around.
Exactly. But the problem inside a cooling weld is that the temperature is dropping far too fast.
The thermal energy is just vanishing.
Right. The party is ending rapidly, and the atoms simply do not have the time or the heat to wander across the room and rebuild their crystal lattices step by step.
Reconstructive diffusion becomes entirely too sluggish to get the job done.
Exactly. The guests are freezing up in their tracks, so the steel has to resort to a completely different method to change its structure.
Okay, what's the backup plan?
It relies on a mechanism the researchers call a displacive transformation.
Displacive transformation.
Yeah. Without the time for individual atoms to migrate, the steel shifts strategies entirely. During a displacive transformation, there is no diffusion.
Wait, no diffusion at all?
None. The iron atoms and the heavy substitutional elements within the metal, they do not travel.
So what do they do?
Instead, they reconfigure their crystal lattice in a sudden, highly coordinated movement.
Oh, I see. It's a flash mob.
A flash mob, yes.
Yeah. Instead of wandering around the party slowly forming groups, suddenly 50 people in the room take one synchronized step to the left, lock arms, and strike a pose.
That is exactly what happens. The atoms execute this sudden, coordinated shift, effectively freezing their new structural changes instantly.
Wow.
And when billions of atoms do that exact synchronized dance all at once, it actually causes a macroscopic shape change in the metal.
If we connect this to the bigger picture.
Ah, right. If we connect this to the bigger picture, that synchronized dance has severe physical consequences.
Right, because they are changing shape inside an already solid material.
Precisely. When those atoms shift together in a displacive transformation, they cause what material scientists call invariant plane strains.
Invariant plane strains. That sounds intense.
It is. Essentially, the newly formed shape of the acicular fairy is trying to force its volume and shape into the existing rigid structure of the surrounding austenite steel.
And the surrounding steel doesn't just politely make room, I imagine.
Oh, definitely not. It pushes back.
Tremendously so, right?
Tremendously. It creates an intense amount of physical strain and tension.
So how does the new structure survive that?
To survive this pressure and minimize the strain energy, the acicular ferret cannot just form into big blocky chunks.
That would just break the metal apart.
Right. The physics force it to grow into those very thin, lens-like plates we mentioned earlier.
Ah, the flattened needles.
Yes. And ideally, the steel favors forming these plates in pairs.
Paired.
Mutually accommodating plates that push against the surrounding steel in opposing directions, effectively canceling out each other's strain.
That is wild. The metal is literally shape-shifting under pressure, slicing itself into razor-thin plates just to survive the internal stress of its own cooling process.
It is a violent environment.
And because the plates are trying to minimize that specific strain, a logical person would naturally think their placement inside the metal is highly calculated.
You would think so.
Right. You would picture an engineer carefully placing stress relief joints in a skyscraper to ensure perfect balance.
It makes it less intuitively.
But this brings us to the core mystery of Yang and Hadashia's paper. The seeds these plates grow from introduce a massive logical paradox.
Let's examine that nucleation problem.
Yes. Let's get into the seeds.
These plates of acicular fairy do not just spontaneously pop into existence in the middle of the steel. They require a starting point.
They need an anchor.
Exactly. They have to nucleate or begin their growth on something physical. The researchers note that they nucleate heterogeneously on non-metallic inclusions trapped inside the weld.
Okay, I want to make sure I am picturing this right for the listener.
Sure.
A non-metallic inclusion basically means a tiny speck of an impurity.
Yep, impurities.
Like maybe some titanium oxide or another compound that got trapped inside the steel while it was still a boiling liquid pool.
That is the exact scenario. And that speck is where the paradox originates.
That's so.
Because these inclusions form while the steel is still entirely liquid.
Right.
And liquid steel has no rigid crystalline structure. It is pure fluid chaos.
Just tumbling around.
Exactly. So as these tiny specks of oxide form and float around in the weld pool, their orientation in three-dimensional space is entirely random.
They're tumbling freely in the currents of the liquid metal.
Right. And by the time the liquid steel solidifies and traps them in place, those specks are frozen, facing every conceivable direction.
And this is where I have to pause and push back on the physics of this process.
Go for it.
If the starting seeds, these little trap specks of oxide, are basically just scattered randomly by the chaotic currents of liquid steel, shouldn't the final microscopic structure just look like a completely randomized mess?
That is the logical assumption, yes.
I mean, if you stand in a field and throw a handful of seeds blindly into a hurricane, you do not expect to see perfectly aligned rows of corn sprout up the next week.
No, you definitely do not.
You expect a random scattering. If a plate of acicular ferrite grows directly out of a tumbling, randomly oriented seed, the physical angle of that plate should also be completely random.
It should be a direct translation.
Right. A one-to-one translation of chaotic seed to chaotic plate. Why wouldn't it be?
Well, that assumption was the prevailing logic at the time. If the inclusion is randomly oriented, the plate growing from it must follow suit.
Exactly.
If you have thousands of inclusions frozen at random angles, you should have thousands of plates pointing in thousands of completely different directions, crisscrossing in total structural anarchy.
Anarchy. So how did Yang and Badeshi approach this?
They recognize that, to answer that very valid logical argument, theoretical models were not enough. They had to look at the actual physical evidence.
They had to see it.
Yes. They needed to examine the deposited microstructure of a real industrial-grade weld and see if that expected chaos held true.
But looking at atoms isn't like looking at a drop of pond water under a high school microscope, right?
Oh, not at all.
The experimental setup they designed to test this is an incredibly meticulous feat of engineering on its own.
The preparation was vital to getting accurate results. The researchers created a multi-run weld, meaning they laid down 21 separate layers of welding using standard manual metal arc techniques.
Wait, 21 runs?
Yeah, 21 layers. They were deliberately simulating a heavy-duty, real-world industrial process using 4-millimeter E10000-16G electrodes.
So they weren't just making a fragile lab abstraction. This was real-world stuff.
Exactly.
And they specifically harvested their test samples from the very top layer of that 21-run weld.
Yes, which is a crucial detail.
Why only the top layer?
Well, if you take a sample from the middle layers, that metal has been reheated 20 times by the subsequent welds placed on top of it.
Oh, right.
Reheating alters the original crystal structure. They needed the pure, undisturbed, as deposited metal from the final pass.
To see the original freeze. That
makes exactly. Sense. Once they secured that pristine top layer sample, the real challenge began.
Getting a look at it.
Yeah. They milled this piece of tough steel down until it was a slice just 0.08 millimeters thick.
Basically nothing.
Almost nothing. They electropolished it to a mirror finish and then placed it into a transmission electron microscope, or TEM, specifically a Philips EM400T.
Okay, a transmission electron microscope. So instead of bouncing light off the surface of the metal, they're firing a high-voltage beam of electrons straight through this incredibly thin slice of steel, right?
That is the principle.
Using the way the electrons pass through to map the atomic structure inside.
Yes, but almost immediately, they hit a fascinating technical hurdle.
Of course they did.
Normally, material scientists measure the precise crystalline orientation of a microscopic sample using a technique that produces Kikuchi lines.
Kikuchi lines? What are those?
When electrons scatter through a well-ordered crystal, they form distinct patterns of intersecting bands. You can think of Kikuchi lines as a highly precise, highly readable map of the crystal lattice.
A map? But let me guess, the acicular ferrite wouldn't hand over the map.
No, it would not. The lines were completely unreadable. They were entirely blurry. And the reason why it connects directly back to our flash mob analogy from earlier.
Oh, the displacive transformation.
Right. Because the acicular ferrite formed via that violently sudden displacive transformation, the internal structure was left with an incredibly high dislocation density. The flash mob basically left a messy room behind.
Overturned tables and spilled drinks.
Exactly. The crystal was full of, imagine shining a strong flashlight through a complex cut glass crystal chandelier.
Okay.
And then looking at the distinct dots of light that project onto the wall behind it.
I can picture that.
As the electron beam diffracts off the crystal planes inside the steel, it creates a specific pattern of bright dots on a sensor.
Okay, so just dots instead of lines.
Right. By measuring the distance, geometry, and intensity of those dots of light, they could reverse engineer the exact 3D angle of the crystal that cast them.
Wow.
It required running complex mathematical rotation matrices just to process the geometry, but it provided the precision they desperately needed.
So they do the math on the diffraction dots, they clear up the fuzzy image, and they finally get a clear mathematical look at the angles of these adjacent plates.
They did.
Now remember the expectation we set up earlier. Tumbling seeds frozen at random angles should produce a forest of plates growing in total structural anarchy.
Total anarchy, right.
What did the math actually reveal?
The data, which is summarized in Table 2 of their paper, yielded staggering results. Yes. They measured the specific orientations of pairs of adjacent plates that nucleated right next to each other on different inclusions.
Okay.
Out of the pairs they analyzed, an overwhelming majority were similarly oriented in space. In one specific data set, 10 out of 11 adjacent plates were almost perfectly parallel.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Just think about the sheer improbability of that finding.
It is wild.
You have these specks tumbling chaotically in liquid steel. They freeze into place at completely random angles. The plates start to grow outward.
Right.
And yet, despite launching from those completely random starting blocks, these adjacent plates somehow end up pointing in almost the exact same direction.
With axis angle pairs close to symmetry operations of 180 degrees about specific structure orientations, like the 001 or 011 planes.
They found profound order hidden inside the expected chaos. It's like finding out that every single tree in a randomly planted forest somehow decided to point its branches perfectly due north.
That's a perfect way to visualize it. The data definitively proved that there is no one-to-one correspondence between the random orientation of the inclusion and the physical orientation of the ferrite plate.
So the plates are entirely breaking the rules of their own chaotic origin.
Completely breaking them.
Okay, so we have established that the plates align. The transmission electron microscope data proves it beyond a shadow of a doubt. But why?
The million-dollar question.
Why do they bother to align if their origins are random? The researchers solved the what, but that immediately forces us to ask how. They had to find the physical mechanism driving this secret order.
And to find that mechanism, they had to turn to mathematical proof. They had to definitively rule out blind luck.
Because maybe they just got lucky with those 10 out of 11 plates.
Exactly. So they examined the known theoretical models for how a ferrite crystal can grow within an austenite crystal.
What are those models?
Specifically, they looked at the Nishiyama-Wasserman and Kirchhoff-Sachs orientation relationships.
I want to stop and look at those models because they introduce a really important constraint here.
They do.
These models dictate that a crystal doesn't just grow in any random 360-degree direction. There are only a certain number of geometric ways a plate can form based on the structure of the surrounding crystal, right?
Correct.
For Kirchhoff-Sachs, there are exactly 24 possibilities. For Nishiyama-Wasserman, there are 12.
Yep, 12 and 24.
Why are there only 12 or 24 options? Why not infinite?
Well, think of the surrounding austenite steel like a giant Lego base plate.
Oh, I like Lego.
You cannot just slap a new Lego gruck down onto it at a random 47-degree angle.
Right, it wouldn't click.
Exactly. The fixed studs on the base plate dictate that the new brick has to snap into a specific, mathematically rigid orientation. The atomic lattice of the austenite acts exactly like that base plate, forcing the growing ferrite to choose from a limited menu of geometric alignments.
So the growing plates have a fixed menu of shapes they can take.
Yeah.
If the plates were just randomly picking from that menu, you know, growing independently based purely on the tumbling angle of their seed and their relationship to the austenite base plate, the math dictates that only about a quarter of them, roughly 25%, would happen to align parallel to each other by pure chance.
Just random probability, yes.
But as we saw in the diffraction data,
the experiment showed 10 out of 11 adjacent plates aligning. That is over 90%.
Which completely blows the pure chance theory out of the water.
It obliterates it. The proportion of alignment was vastly higher than what random probability would ever allow.
Not even close.
And this glaring statistical reality led Yang and Padecia to their breakthrough conclusion. The mechanism driving this hidden order is a localized phenomenon called sympathetic nucleation.
So what does this all mean? Let's break down the mechanics of sympathetic nucleation for everyone.
Let's do it.
Basically, it means that these plates are not growing in isolation. The formation of the very first plate actively stimulates and physically restricts the growth of the next plate that tries to form nearby.
Right. And to understand why one plate cares about another, we have to go back to the physical strain we discussed earlier.
The flash mob.
Yes. Remember the invariant plane strains caused by the displacive flash mob? The new ferrite plate is forcing its way into the rigid austenite, creating a massive field of internal stress.
Right. The metal is pushing back hard.
Exactly. When that first plate forms, it warps the local environment. Now imagine a second plate trying to nucleate on a different random inclusion just a few micrometers away.
And has to deal with that warped environment.
Yes. The thermodynamics and kinetics of the cooling steel heavily favor mutually accommodating variants. It takes significantly less energy for that second plate to form in an orientation that is sympathetic to its neighbor, rather than fighting against the new stress field.
I think I have a better way to visualize this strain relief.
Okay, let's hear it.
Think of it like trying to pack oddly shaped, bulky suitcases into the cramped trunk of a small car.
That's a familiar struggle.
Right. If you throw the first suitcase in at a weird slanted angle, it creates an awkward gap and puts pressure on the trunk lid.
Yeah.
When you go to put the second suitcase in, the easiest way to relieve that spatial tension and get the trunk closed isn't to throw the second one in randomly.
No, you'd never get it closed.
Exactly. The path of least resistance is to slide the second suitcase in perfectly parallel to the first one, nesting them together so they share the tight space efficiently.
What's fascinating here is that the steel is executing that exact spatial problem solving at the atomic level.
That is just incredible.
The atoms aren't thinking, of course. They are purely driven by the path of thermodynamic least resistance. By aligning sympathetically, nesting those flattened lenses parallel to one another, they minimize the overall strain energy of the local system.
It is a microscopic survival mechanism. By aligning sympathetically, they reduce the internal tension of the weld.
Precisely.
And the macroscopic result of all this microscopic cooperation is that these clusters of aligned acicular ferrite act almost as a single toughening unit.
The interlocking shields.
Right. When a microscopic crack forms under the weight of the bridge and tries to propagate through the weld, it doesn't hit a weak, random scattering of crystals.
No.
It hits an interlocking, coordinated wall of aligned plates and gets stopped dead in its tracks. The order hidden in the chaos is literally what keeps the bridge standing.
It is a perfect encapsulation of how counterintuitive and brilliant materials science can be.
Absolutely.
We began with the logical assumption that a chaotic, random origin, a tumbling speck in liquid metal, must inevitably lead to a chaotic, random result. But sympathetic nucleation shows us that the immediate local environment, the desperate need to minimize physical strain and find equilibrium with your immediate neighbors, can entirely overpower those random beginnings.
It forces a chaotic system to create a highly ordered, structurally superior architecture. It changes the way you look at the physical world. So let's summarize this journey for you, the listener.
Yeah.
We started by looking at a high-strength weld. You know, the kind of structural joint you trust your life to every single day without a second thought.
Yep.
We dove down to the microscopic level to see how that liquid metal cools, watching atoms engage in a displacive transformation, a sudden coordinated flash mob that builds highly strained plates of acicular ferrite.
We did.
We encountered the paradox of the random seeds, fully expecting chaotic growth from tumbling inclusions. But by pushing the limits of transmission electron microscopy and decoding blurry diffraction dots, these researchers proved the chaos was a myth.
A complete myth.
And finally, we discovered how the elegant localized rules of sympathetic nucleation force these plates into a beautifully aligned, strength-enhancing formation, nesting together like suitcases just to survive the intense pressures of their own creation.
It is a profound mechanism, and I think it leaves you with something much bigger to consider outside the realm of metallurgy.
What?
Well, in this 1989 paper, we see that inanimate, microscopic, metallic structures naturally fall into sympathetic alignment to minimize strain and build something vastly stronger than they could ever be individually.
Right.
It makes you wonder, you know, when you look out at the wider world, what other seemingly chaotic random systems in our physical environment possess these hidden, localized rules of cooperation, just waiting for us to zoom in close enough to finally notice the pattern.
The next time you drive over a massive steel bridge, don't just trust the visible metal. Trust the invisible choreography holding it all together.